It's happening by the thousands each day.
He is talking about attacks on Asian Americans. I'm Ira Melman. Coming up, one of the largest and longest lasting COVID-19 lockdowns is coming to an end. China is not happy over new arms sales from the U.S. to Taiwan. A new conservative judge has been sworn in as the next justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. And COVID-19 cleaning could soon be done by an army of robots. It is all on today's VOA Asia. Amid the ongoing threat of the coronavirus, there are surging reports of xenophobic and racist incidents targeting members of the Asian American community in the United States. One college professor has started a website in an effort to collect information about the rise in attacks and what are the main reasons for them. I talk with that professor, Russell Jung, at San Francisco State University, about what he thought was the chief reason.
It's stemming from the Republican Party's strategy to scapegoat China for COVID-19 and displace blame from the current administration to China for COVID-19. As Americans hear that the virus is Chinese, the virus gets racialized, and it's seen as a Chinese virus, and then Chinese people are seen to be those infected, that Chinese people are the ones who are infecting other Americans, and that scapegoating of Chinese in the U.S. then leads to higher rates of racism, interpersonal violence, and attacks and assaults. So we launched our website that reported that receives self-reported incidents of racism. And we're over 2,700 incidents to date. They're rising, and they range from verbal and harassment, where people are yelled at, often have racial slurs slung at them, often told to go back to China. Those make up 70% of our cases. Another 20% of our cases are deliberate shunning, where people avoid Asians. They would see Asians and move aside, not serve them. About 8% are civil rights violations, where we're mistreated at the workplace. And 8% include physical assaults that can constitute hate crimes, where people could get arrested for doing racially motivated crimes. We just received the tip of the iceberg. Another survey by USC found that 39% of Asian Americans had experienced direct incidents of racism. So we're tracking more of the kind of incidents that are occurring, the language being employed, and who's being attacked.
What kind of numbers do we have here?
40% of California Asian Americans experiencing racism would be over 2 million people, right? It's happening by the thousands each day. We have reports from 47 states. It's widespread and pervasive. And we found that people are attacking whom they think are the most vulnerable. Women are harassed 2.4 times more than men. And elderly and youth are often attacked as well.
Is this limited to the United States?
No, this is a global phenomenon. And interestingly, right after we implemented our reporting center, similar sites were set up in Australia and Canada using the same type of coding categories that we employed. And they find really similar trends about the types of verbal harassment, language used. And both the researchers in Canada and Australia say it's President Trump's language and rhetoric that incites increased violence in those places as well. So I was pretty stunned to hear that this inflammatory rhetoric works across the globe as well.
The xenophobia against Chinese Asian Americans is nothing new in the United States. Can you detail that a little bit?
We knew that whenever an epidemic comes from Asia, that Asians would be met with interpersonal violence and racist policies. And that's why we set up the reporting center, because we wanted to document the racism and then hold government accountable. And that happened in the 19th century with the Chinese Exclusion Act, the three plagues of leprosy, smallpox, and malaria were blamed on Chinese. Chinese were also blamed for taking away white workers' jobs, and so they passed the Chinese Exclusion Act. More recently, when SARS came, again, Asian Americans were shunned and attacked. So we were ready when COVID-19 came, and sure enough, we've seen racist violence and we've seen anti-immigrant policies. What's been re-invoked is the yellow peril fear that Asians would come in and dominate the West, especially with their diseases. And so this yellow peril fear is being invoked at this moment, and it's being used to exclude Asians, to harass Asians, and to blame Asians.
Is this the most dangerous this has been in recent years at this point before the election, or has it been worse?
I think clearly, you know, in the 19th century, the physical violence was virulent and, you know, displaced 300 Chinese American communities. So I think, you know, clearly in the 19th century it was worse. In recent history, this is similar to what happened after 9/11 when hundreds and thousands of Muslims and Arab Americans and South Asians were attacked, and it also met with racist policy. So I sort of compare it to after 9/11. But today we have the internet, which circulates racist memes and posts even more. When the president tweets, his voice gets magnified a million times over. So I think the power of the internet and the power of the president's pulpit incites a lot more racism than like, let's say, in 9/11.
That was Professor Russell Jung, chair and professor of the Asian American Studies Department at San Francisco State University. Attempts to get reaction to Professor Jung's comments from the Republican Party or the Trump administration have gone unanswered at the time of this presentation. These are some of the top stories you'll see on VOAnews.com. Vietnam says it's ready to evacuate 1.3 million people as a typhoon approaches. In Hong Kong, a teen pro-democracy activist awaits word on his fate. Thousands in Bangladesh protest against French cartoons. China tells the U.S. not to bully Sri Lanka ahead of Pompeo's visit. Japan's ANA Airlines will retire more than a tenth of its fleet and delay two aircraft orders. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. European governments moved Tuesday to set new curbs in motion to try to rein in a fast-growing surge of coronavirus infections and provide economic balm to help businesses survive the pandemic. The United States, Russia, France, Sweden, Poland, and other countries have registered record numbers of infections in recent days as autumn turns to winter in the Northern Hemisphere and people socialize indoors where the risk of infection is higher. More than 43 million people have been infected by the coronavirus globally. Over a million have died, according to a Reuters tally, with the United States leading the way in the number of infections and deaths. One of the world's longest COVID-19 lockdowns is coming to an end in the Australian city of Melbourne. From Tuesday, all shops, cafes, and restaurants can reopen, and strict stay-at-home orders will be lifted. The lockdown was imposed in early July in response to a deadly second wave of infections. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Victoria, Australia's second most populous state, has for a second consecutive day recorded no new coronavirus infections or fatalities. A sustained fall in daily cases has allowed the authorities to end one of the world's longest COVID-19 lockdowns in the city of Melbourne. From Tuesday, the retail and hospitality industries can reopen, although conditions still apply. Face coverings remain mandatory, and cafes and restaurants can serve a maximum of 20 people inside and 50 outdoors. Weddings can now proceed with up to 10 guests and funerals with 20 mourners. Strict stay-at-home orders imposed on Melbourne's 5 million residents will end. Victoria Premier Daniel Andrews says now is the time to bring the lockdown to an end.
We are able to say that now is the time to open up. This belongs to every single Victorian. Every single Victorian who's followed the rules, stayed the course, worked with me and my team to bring this second wave to an end. But it is not over. This virus is not going away. It is going to continue to be a feature of our lives every day until a vaccine turns up. These are big steps.
Victoria State has been at the centre of Australia's COVID-19 crisis. It's had the majority of infections and almost 90% of the nation's virus fatalities. The lockdown has not been universally popular. Two people have been charged over an anti-lockdown protest in Melbourne last week, including a woman who allegedly kicked a police horse. The state government has been accused of being too cautious while jobs were lost, and there are concerns that the mental health consequences will be dire. Victoria's Conservative opposition leader is Michael O'Brien.
There'll be scars on the psyche of this state that will not heal. There are many, many people whose lives have changed permanently because of what they've had to endure over the last few months.
More than 27,500 coronavirus cases have been diagnosed in Australia, and 905 people have died. The federal government has said there have been four critical parts to the nation's response to the pandemic: the closure of its international borders to foreign travellers, widespread testing, reliable contact tracing, and community respect for hygiene and physical distancing protocols. Victoria State Government has indicated it plans to ease other restrictions in early November that are likely to include reopening gyms and allowing residents to travel more than 25 kilometres from home. As Melbourne's lockdown comes to an end, there is immense relief and celebration among residents, or as local media have put it, there have been cheers, tears and beers. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, frustrated with a months-long political power struggle during the coronavirus pandemic, Malaysians have praised King Al Sultan Abdullah for rejecting Prime Minister Mahathir Yassin's request to impose emergency rule. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. The U.S. State Department has approved the potential sale of 100 Boeing-made Harpoon coastal defense systems to Taiwan, a deal that has a potential value of up to $2.37 billion. The move comes days after the State Department approved the potential sale of three other weapon systems to Taiwan, including sensors, missiles, and artillery that could have a total value of $1.8 billion. Taiwan's Defense Ministry spokesman Xi Shun-wen said Tuesday that the recent U.S. arms sales to Taiwan will enhance its overall combat capabilities to maintain peace and stability over the Taiwan Strait. The announcement comes a day after China said it will sanction U.S. defense contractors, including Lockheed Martin Corporation, Boeing Company's Defense Division, and Raytheon Technologies Corporation over proposed arms sales to Taiwan.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news from VOA Asia: a shocking 10,000 police personnel are now under quarantine in Kuala Lumpur, with over 200 testing positive for the coronavirus and undergoing treatment. Malaysia's home minister says the police personnel had been the most exposed to the virus because of the nature of their work. all of the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This is Business Inc. I'm Ira Melman. Asia's biggest film festival, the Busan International Film Festival, is reopening, but with social distancing restrictions in place. The 10-day film festival's 25th anniversary has been forced to move many screenings online. This year, the festival will not see any opening and closing ceremonies, red carpet parades, after parties, or outdoor fan events. Kwang Hayoung, a screenwriter, says this year's festival feels very different from past years.
The last time I came to the festival, it was full of energy and dynamic. It also feels like they haven't advertised the festival as much as they did in the past. I think it's a bit of a shame.
Festival events such as judging, press conferences, and discussion forums are still featured. However, they're hosted online. Ah Tai Jung, an attendee of the festival, says one of his favorite events is guest visits, where cinemagoers hear directly from actors and directors.
I think guest visits and being able to see different actors and directors is what makes the film festival different from ordinary cinema. I'm really disappointed that guest visits aren't happening this year.
With South Korea imposing a 2-week quarantine for travelers arriving in the country, only 45 South Korean filmmakers and actors are able to have screening talks at this year's festival. After a government crackdown, protest groups in Thailand have begun keeping the venues for their demonstrations demanding the resignation of Premier Prayut Chan-o-cha. However, protesters are sometimes second to make it to the venue. Street vendors usually get to the protest venues first. They're even being compared to the CIA for their ability to find protest schedules, usually on social media, and set up their food stands before the protesters arrive. With a boom in business that food vendors have experienced since the protests began in July, the vendors are now considered a regular feature on the protest sidelines. Not only are street vendors selling more than usual, but they also are able to make their workday shorter. Ratapal Sukpa, a meatball street food vendor, likes shorter days.
Earnings were good before the protests, but selling at the protest sites, you sell out faster than usual. Before, I head home around midnight, but nowadays I can head home as early as 8 p.m.
But street vendors say they're also conscious of the risk of doing business in such a dicey environment. For Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman.
Are my pets safe from coronavirus? There's no current evidence that cats and dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit the websites at the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease and Control. A message from your friends at VOA Asia.
Now on VOA Asia, Judge Amy Coney Barrett, President Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, has been sworn in. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on moves that happened just days before the U.S. election.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
With President Trump looking on, Judge Amy Coney Barrett takes the oath to become an associate justice of the nation's highest court. President Donald Trump.
She is one of our nation's most brilliant legal scholars, and she will make an outstanding justice on the highest court in our land.
On this vote,
by a vote of 52 to 48 Monday, the U.S. Senate confirmed the 48-year-old mother of seven and devout Catholic to fill the vacancy left by the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg last month. All but one Republican supported Barrett, members of the president's party calling her a well-qualified nominee. But all Democrats voted against her, arguing that with early voting already underway, the confirmation vote is too close to Election Day. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
The Republican Senate majority decided to thwart the will of the people
and confirm a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court in the middle of a presidential election after more than 60 million Americans have voted. Let the record show that tonight the Republican majority will break 231 years of precedent and become the first majority to confirm a Supreme Court justice this close to Election Day.
Democrats concerned Barrett cements a 6-3 conservative majority on the court. Democratic Senator Chris Coons.
The cases that could be in jeopardy with a Justice Barrett on the Supreme Court cover a vast range of issues. Issues which together affect hundreds of millions of Americans' lives, from health care to education to consumer protection to marriage equality.
But during a 4-day confirmation process, Barrett told lawmakers she would not bring a personal agenda to judicial decisions, drawing praise from the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
For the young conservative women out there, who are pro-life and embrace your faith, there's a seat at the table for you.
Barrett will almost immediately hear key cases, including a challenge to the legality of an Obama administration health care law that provides insurance coverage to millions of Americans, as well as possible challenges to the record numbers of mail-in ballots in the 2020 election. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
A bomb blast at a religious seminary in the Pakistani city of Peshawar Tuesday killed at least 7 people and wounded more than 80, according to police and hospital officials. Edward Baran has more.
There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the attack near the border with Afghanistan, which has long been plagued by Islamist violence. Peshawar's police chief said the bomb, said to have been in a plastic bag, contained up to 6 kilograms of explosives. Though militant violence in the city and in Pakistan in general has fallen over recent years, there has been an increase in attacks on the security forces in the region around Peshawar. Some of the past attacks have been claimed by the Pakistani Taliban. However, the militant group released a statement saying they condemned Tuesday's blast and denied involvement.
That was Reuters' Edward Baran reporting. Disinfecting public spaces is a major undertaking, but it is essential for a safe return to normal activity. Now an army of robots that uses ultraviolet light to disinfect surfaces in the air, as Matt Dibble reports.
When all the other workers have left, this robot gets busy cleaning hospital rooms. It is disinfecting using a form of ultraviolet light called UVC. Andy Molnar is a vice president for UVD Robots.
UVC light in particular is the optimal germicidal wavelength to deactivate bacteria, fungus, and viruses. And it does it either on surfaces or whether they're in the air. So the robot was originally designed for hospital use to reduce hospital-acquired infections, which is a major problem in every health system globally. And it's very effective at doing that.
The robot is first trained on where to go and how long to stay there. After that, it can perform the same task autonomously.
Since COVID-19, all of a sudden, we were inundated with interest in the technology in a number of different sectors.
UV robots are now at work in hotels, offices, and airports around the world. For safety, people must leave the area or wear protective gear.
All forms of UV light are known to be harmful to the skin and to the eyes. And so it's very important that people exit the room or the space before the lamps come on.
Light-sensitive stickers can be used to determine how well the robot has performed.
And we know exactly for each bacteria or for each virus exactly what energy level is required to deactivate it.
Manual cleaning of high-touch surfaces is still recommended by experts. But the robots are adding another line of defense in the war against deadly microbes. Matt Dibble for VOA News.
Thank you for joining us. Our thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.